Okay, hello, and welcome to the latest episode of Innovations in Education, the eSchool News podcast that explores the latest and greatest in edtech every month. In this episode, we dive into one of the most popular, yet many times misunderstood acronyms in the world of education, good old STEM. Everyone has heard about it. Lots of people like to advocate for it. But what does it actually mean in the operations of a day-to-day classroom? I asked this question to Patrick Brown. He's the Executive Director of STEM and Career Technical Education in St. Charles County, Missouri. He oversees the STEM and technical programs for approximately 18,000 students. His role involves developing integrated STEM courses, emphasizing critical thinking, and real-world problem solving. Now, all that sounds great, but what does that actually mean? Have a listen. Let's dive right into it. Maybe you can give our audience a little bit of an introduction to yourself and to your district.
Yeah, absolutely. So my name's Pat Brown. I'm Executive Director of STEM and Career and Technical Education for a large school district in St. Charles County, Missouri. We're actually a pretty big district for our state. I think we're the seventh or eighth largest district in the state at around 18,000 students. So my primary role at this point is to develop STEM-related courses and programs, and also career and technical education-related courses and programs, which I see really sort of complementing STEM. In addition to that, I'm very active in the scholarship in STEM and also in science education. So I'm the author of the best-selling book series, Instructional Sequence Matters. It's published by NSTA. I've written quite a bit about also just ways to promote, engage, and activate students' ideas in their learning. So I'm also a best-selling author of Activating Student Ideas in Elementary Science, also published by NSTA. So yeah, absolutely thrilled to talk with you today.
Yeah, what are you doing in your spare time? A lot of stuff going on.
Yeah, I got two young kids that keep me busy, very active in sports, and I'm an avid runner. And but I just absolutely love sort of exploring learners and learning and creating environments that really tap into the assets that all kids bring to us.
As I mentioned before we started recording, the education space love their acronyms, right?
And oh, yeah.
There's one acronym that almost before the two-letter AI came about, I would say that STEM may have been the most popular of those acronyms going back many years. But if you go to a EdTech conference or you go to a session online and you hear people talk about it, and I know many times I'll nod sagely talking about STEM and issues surrounding STEM, but it can mean many different things to many different people. Maybe we can start off from your point of view on how you would say define STEM. Give us your three sentences on what STEM is, if you can do it.
I'm glad that you brought this up, because there's few educational acronyms that are almost common vernacular, and STEM is one of them. I mean, you bring up the term STEM in just everyday conversations, folks know what it is. It's very hard to define. So I instead of a definition, I like to think about it in attributes. So one of the attributes, it definitely includes the four domains that are included in the acronym. So science, technology, engineering, and math. But I think the critical piece is that it's the integration of those four domains. It's not those things separately for something to really be a STEM sort of topic or a STEM learning experience. So that's a piece of it. I'd say the other attribute, and this really came out of why STEM even is important, it's a career attribute. So it's starting to prepare kids for areas that we know are high need, high wage, and only projected to be even higher wage, high need in the future. And that career component is not just sort of a need component in terms of just fulfilling jobs, but the need to prepare kids in different ways than we've ever prepared them before. And that really ties into the third component. The third component really emphasizes that STEM, it's more than a body of knowledge. Sort of we've elevated the importance of of using practices that are valued in each of those four domains. And we've also elevated the importance of critical thinking. And it's really learning about topics, issues, or problems through the lenses of whatever content is associated with it, the problem-solving skills and abilities that are necessary, and then the critical thinking that really goes into thinking about data and evidence as sources for us to help individuals make sense. So I said a lot. I didn't give you a three-sentence definition, but I think those three attributes are really key.
Yeah, it certainly is a great base to go through this discussion. Talk a little bit about how you take those concepts and apply them in the day-to-day management of a district. And I'll maybe even take you deeper down the rabbit hole into what does that look like in a classroom? How does that change the way in which a piece of curriculum is being created or there's an instructional strategy being implemented with the idea of having STEM being part of that?
Absolutely. So the other thing that's super popular right now is talking about teaching to promote student sense making. And the reason I bring this up is because approaching instruction from a sense-making perspective, it completely aligns with what we want to achieve in STEM. So I want to kind of give you some key elements of teaching for sense-making and then show how that kind of connects to STEM. So in a sense-making classroom, we're really starting off instruction by activating kids' ideas. And we do this in two ways. We ask them about their thoughts, their experiences, and then we situate that around problems that might exist in their region, or maybe even bigger, like a global problem, or we situate it in a phenomena. So phenomena-based teaching is huge in science education. So maybe we situate it around a phenomena. And those two things really activate a kid's thinking. So if we ask them about their thoughts or ideas around a specific problem, issue, or a phenomena, we've sort of lit the fuse in their mind because we've created that need-to-know situation. So the second key element is we want to give kids opportunities to make evidence-based claims. And this piece is key. So they need hands-on, minds-on experiences. It doesn't necessarily have to be an experiment or a demo, although kids absolutely love those. But it could be looking at large data sets, especially for high school age kids, to start to extract some evidence that they're gleaning from that data. The third key piece is we need to find ways to enhance kids' understanding. And what I mean by that, it's really twofold. So sometimes, and this is really true in the sciences and engineering, there's academic terms, but they're just terms. But if we can introduce those important ideas in light of students' firsthand experiences, formulating claims, it gives them sort of that academic vocabulary that they need and also allows them to summarize big ideas using sort of the appropriate vocabulary. And the last piece is also critical. It's metacognition. And metacognition gets a lot of attention, but the way I think about it is kids thinking about what works and what doesn't work for their learning, because a key piece of STEM is creating more self-sufficient learners, more kids that can problem solve. And if we can be purposeful and intentional during our instructional practices about kids thinking about what's working, what's not working, we better give them the tools to be problem solvers in the future. I like to keep things simple. I boil it down to those four elements: activating kids' ideas, having them form evidence-based claims, enhancing their learning, and then promoting metacognition. And then I approach it through what I like to call an explore before explain format. And that's very much teaching those four elements in that order. So we want to give kids firsthand experiences doing explorations before we introduce academic vocabulary. And I think this will make sense for most folks. Academic vocabulary, if there's no framework to incorporate it, it doesn't stick. Approaching those four key elements in that order that I described, it's really critical. Yeah, critically important.
It seems, a lot of this responsibility, obviously, as most everything does in the classroom, fall upon the responsibility of the educator themselves, of the faculty themselves, right? And yeah. It seems a lot of the ideas that you're expressing here would be dependent on each individual educator as you go along. Is there a way to standardize this? I mean, because you have different types and different personalities of educators, some who might be naturally inclined to this sort of work in this way. Others, maybe not so much, or maybe a lot of, this is the way I've always done it. This is the way I always will. A lot of that kind of all fell apart during COVID, and we've all had to establish new strategies. But even so, it seems that it would kind of be dependent upon the educator. Talk a little bit about how you can see this standardized across the school, or even more so across a district.
Oh, absolutely. And I've had a tremendous amount of success with this. So I'm going to kind of explain the process that I use. And I also feel like I need to say that educators, they're remarkable creative individuals. And the more we can tap into their creativity and their expertise, the better. So I use the saying, we're not going to throw the baby out with the bathwater. And what I mean by that is so many folks, especially in the science area, are already doing hands-on explorations. We're going to really focus on what teachers are already doing and then sort of work out from there. So really considering like the tried and true hands-on stuff you're already doing and then working towards those other elements from that starting point, because that's really the key destination. If we can get kids to make an evidence-based claim, then we've created a situation where the kids are doing the hard intellectual work, because there's only one way for a kid to make an evidence-based claim. They've got to be able to say something about content based on their experiences with data. And the only way they can say something about that data is if they've done some critical thinking. So when I work with teachers, and I can kind of paint the picture, we really start with all the hands-on they're doing, and then we focus in on one hands-on to think about a lesson, and we work out from that. So we'll think about, okay, so they're doing this great hands-on experiment. How could we activate kids' ideas about that hands-on experience? Do we want to use a problem? One of the hallmarks of engineering is really the purpose of engineering is to solve problems. Or do we really want to explore a question, which is more what the purpose of science is? And then if we want to explore a question or a problem, what sort of phenomena can we use? We sort of work the same way on the back end. So once we figured out, the explorations kids can have that allow them to form evidence-based claims, we think about, well, what teacher enhancements are necessary to sophisticate kids' understanding? And where I always tell my folks to go is go to your standards. They're going to tell you the key ideas and key terms to make kids more scientifically literate. And then the last piece is really throughout this whole thing, how can we promote students thinking about their developing understanding? It sounds simple, but a lot of times it's just asking kids, what did you think at the beginning? What do you think now? And what sort of things facilitated your development of ideas? So I've really simplified the process, but I like to think most folks got into science or STEM teaching because they like hands-on. Let's start with the good things folks are already doing and then sort of flesh out those other key elements based on those hands-on type things that really are what most of us get into teaching for.
Yeah. Interesting. Listening to your insights here, and I mentioned the other acronym, AI. It seems like a lot of these strategies might be effective against what some of the controversies surrounding AI is and the use of students using it to, say, plagiarize or cheat or this or that. The things that you're encouraging in terms of getting students to come up with their own ideas and come through is almost kind of a solution against AI, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, but the way I view AI, and I'm glad you brought this up, it's a tool. So I was thinking about this, even this morning. It's similar to like a microscope's a tool. If you don't know how to finely focus or coarsely focus a microscope, regardless of that slide you put under there, you're not going to be able to see things. And in terms of AI, you've got to know the question to ask. And you, as a student, you've got to know what are the implications of what that AI is spitting out for the task that you're trying to solve. So when I think of AI, I think of it as a tool. And as a tool, that, you know, the students, they need to be able to articulate the question that they're really looking for, and then to be able to analyze what the AI is generating for them. I don't know, we probably could get into debate whether AI is smart or not. But I mean, if we just look at what AI is doing, it's pulling data, it's triangulating the data, and it's putting out an assertion based on the triangulation of data, but it's not asking the question.
Right.
And it's not deciding what are the implications of the evidence that comes out. So,
right. So it's just another tool in the toolbox that actually encourages these STEM strategies. Now, let me ask you this, you know, for our readers and our listeners who are not as far along the path, they might be hearing from their school board that they need more STEM, whatever that is. There's an encouragement of kind of developing STEM strategies within their schools. What would be some first steps for them to take?
Well, you know, I mentioned the sort of the four attributes, and I really think those are key. And it's more than just like me promoting it. Those four things are they're supported by huge bodies of scholarship. So not single studies, like cognitive science supports it, neurobiological science supports it, science education, math education supports it. So, I mean, those attributes are heavily grounded in the research. And I like to tell folks that sort of understand the research on learners and learning, use that when you go to evaluate curriculum that you're going to develop or purchase, or if you're going to create more of a homegrown curriculum. So I wanted to bring this up because there are so many curriculum providers that say they're STEM, but if you're a teacher or maybe a coordinator, you've got to have those look fors to see really, is it going to promote the type of learning that we need of our students for a 21st century? Or is it just sort of throwing that term that's so popular on a curriculum, hoping somebody will purchase it? I do quite a bit of this work with even people that are developing curriculum or looking to purchase curriculum. And I say, you know, at a minimum, it boils down to these elements. Like, is it activating kids' ideas around problems? Do kids have opportunities to make the evidence-based claim? Are there enhancements that take it a little bit further? So that's what I'd really advocate for. And on the school board side, really being able to articulate to a school board, when you take either a curriculum that's developed by teachers or a commercially developed one, that it really illustrates those key things that we know about learners and learning.
So you really just need to get under the hood of these products and services and see that they apply to these pillars that you mentioned then.
Yeah, but it's amazing professional learning for teachers to, instead of going into a curriculum blind, to have look fors, and they really get a deeper sense of, is this a good curriculum that's going to take my kids to where they need, or is it just stamping the label STEM on it with some key missing things.
Right. Now, to go back to your particular journey in terms of implementing these things within your district, and you look out on the horizon, what is kind of on the top of your list of things to do going forward?
Oh, gosh. You know what? One of the hardest things about being a STEM teacher is it's being ready to evolve and pivot. I think that's a key piece of it. So if you're a teacher that likes to teach the same thing year after year, you're going to really struggle with this because it's always changing based on regional and global needs. I think for me personally, I want to start to make better connections between some of the regional issues that we face and approach some of the things that we've taught in very traditional ways that sort of pivot and have more of a regional focus to it. So our standards are set, but how we teach to those standards is up to us. So things that we've taught in maybe science in a very traditional way or math in a very traditional way, we could use a regional problem that we're facing as the context for teaching those standards that's already in our curriculum. And that's going to take some work. It's going to take some learning on teachers' behalfs and administrators' behalfs about things that they haven't traditionally used as sort of the focus for a lesson. But I'm excited about it because really, if we go back to one of the big purposes of STEM, and that's to look at problems and phenomena that we face either regionally or globally, I feel like that's more true to it than teaching a science or math or a technology, computer science topic sort of in isolation of those regional or global issues.
How about on the assessment side of things? I mean, these are certainly new techniques and strategies. I assume it can't be a traditional assessment technique on the other side.
Yeah, I think performance-based is the route to go. So really looking at what is the student producing and then how are they supporting those STEM-related claims? What data as evidence are they using? It's not that it can't be done through a multiple choice type question, but we really want to get at how is the student's thinking evolved and how are they sort of supporting their ideas with data that serves as evidence. And I realize it takes more time and nobody has enough time. But if you think about the work we all do, it's really more in line with performance-based authentic tasks where we have to put an idea out there and support it with data that serves as evidence than more rote type things that you typically find in easy to assess type items.
Right. How about the fifth letter, the occasional fifth letter I find with if you're adding the A into STEM to turn it into STEAM? Is that something that you indulge in?
Yes and no. So, I mean, certainly in the arts, they go through many of the same problem-solving type processes that engineers, scientists, mathematicians, and definitely in computer science and technology. I guess my caution is anytime you add something else to something that already exists, I worry that you're going to lose something. So you know, adding art, I don't see an issue with it because certainly those skills that you're using in both the fine and the performing arts, they totally align with the types of skills and knowledge you want kids to develop in engineering, math, and all the other STEM-related areas. I just think if a district decides to go that route, then they really need to be purposeful and intentional when they do it to show that, hey, these things are all connected. Because if you just have art out here and you have STEAM, but you're not showing the connection, then I'd say, well, you're not really doing the STEAM that is needed to promote the higher levels of learning.
Especially if you've already had maybe some sort of established strategy going in and then you're just kind of trying to wrench something in on top of it, right?
Yeah, I think, yeah. I mean, it's up to the district and the leaders to decide, are we STEAM, are we STEM, are we something even bigger? But then the purposeful and intentional sort of special combination of those things need to be there if you're really sort of living up to that acronym that you choose.
Yeah. And now you mentioned that this is a never-ending process. It's not something that you establish and that is static. How do you kind of stay abreast of the changes yourself? I mean, do you have any recommendations for our audience in terms of resources that are out there, other sort of online communities or professional learning opportunities to kind of keep themselves abreast on the state of STEM?
Yeah, I think definitely looking at your regional trends is a good place. And just because I pick maybe an issue in my region doesn't mean it's going to be an issue in another region, either in the state of Missouri or even in the country. So being attuned to those, I think we are lucky in that there's some very well-developed curricular materials that really do the justice that STEM is advocating for. So I would be also really just sort of, you know, intentional about those curriculum related purposes and seeing that. I guess I can say this. I mean, I just gave a really popular talk called Can STEM Save the World? And the examples I did were just, I shared probably 20 to 25 newspaper clippings of all the severe weather we experienced last summer and the heat. So even those become topics, and that was something we faced across the U.S. and even globally, just really hot temperatures for a long time that we hadn't experienced before.
Well, Doctor, your insights have been really valuable. I think, again, it's this, when you talk about STEM, it's this ethereal subject, and you're really able to kind of make it more precise and concise for our readers and our listeners to kind of take next steps with it. So I appreciate your time, and I appreciate your insights, and good luck going forward with your district.
Yeah, you bet. Kevin, I really enjoyed the conversation. Love talking about STEMs. Thank you.
And that's all we have for this month's episode of Innovations in Education. Be sure to go up to eschoolnews.com and add your name to the subscription list if you want to get this podcast every month, if you're not already doing so. Be sure to go into our webinars where we have other conversations such as this, talking about some of the top and most important issues that you need to learn for the way that you operate your school districts. So thanks again for listening, and have a great day.